Welcome to Mataco Talks. I'm Seamus Donoghue, the VP of Strategic Alliances, Mataco. If this is your first time joining, Mataco Talks is a bi-weekly podcast where we invite thought leaders from the digital space to discuss their operations, current events, and the opportunities in an exponential future. It will also be available on your favorite podcast channels after this live broadcast. So very glad to say today's topic is unifying the digital asset trade lifecycle. And I have with us today the CEO of AlgoTrader, Andy Fleury. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you, Seamus. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, I think let's start with the usual question. I'd love to hear, your personal journey into the traditional asset space into crypto and how that has happened for AlgoTrader as well.
Yeah, sure. I'll start with a personal intro. I'm an engineer originally. I was an Air Force pilot here in Switzerland in my younger years. Worked as a consultant for Arthur Andersen, project manager for Siemens. Was an interesting time. We did projects for the Swiss intelligence agency, so the Swiss NSA, so to speak. Also done a few startups. AlgoTrader is actually my sixth startup already. Right before AlgoTrader, I was a manager at a Swiss hedge fund where we traded automated trading strategies in volatility derivatives. At that time, we were looking for a solution like AlgoTrader, but it didn't exist on the market. So we originally created the platform just for our own purposes, so an in-house solution. And during that time, we obviously met other managers, and it seemed that there was a need for such a solution on the market. So in 2014, I left the hedge fund. I started AlgoTrader, originally mostly selling to buy-side clients. And since then, we kind of had two pivot points. In 2017, we started adding support for the first few crypto exchanges. And, as you can imagine, in the meantime, we're doing most of our revenue with crypto clients. Then fast forward 2 years to 2019, the first two crypto banks, Signum and SEBA, went live. And since then, Signum is doing all their trading through our product. And at that time, we realized, wait a minute, that there might be a big opportunity for banks around the globe to now offer or want to offer digital assets to their clients. So we decided to launch a new product called WireSwarm, which is basically an order and execution management system for digital assets. So what we do, we provide connectivity to the largest exchanges, brokers, market makers through a unified API. We support both agency and principal trading, things like smart order routing, execution algos, things like that. With today, since the start, since 2014, we've onboarded over 120 clients around the globe. We're currently about 30 people in our team with offices here at the headquarters in Zurich. We've got an office in New York, an office in Singapore. And we're basically a venture capital backed startup. We have investors like Credit Suisse, the EOS Fund, Blockchain Valley Ventures, and Birth Capital.
Interesting. Okay, well, since you've launched the WireSwarm product, how have you seen the market evolve? How has it changed since you launched that product?
Well, we've been in the market since 2014, and back then crypto was at a very early stage. We had a few clients already back then that used our software to trade exchanges like Mt. Gox, for example. We thought, why not give it a try and add capabilities for crypto trading ourselves. personally, I didn't expect much of it. And boy, was I wrong, completely wrong. You know, now, as I said, this is the bigger part of our business. When we originally launched crypto capabilities in 2017, most of our clients were crypto prop shops. There was a lot of arbitrage trading back then. There were still arbitrage opportunity. There were some retail traders. Everything was very unstable. You know, exchanges went down very frequently. You know, they changed their APIs like people change their underwear. So a lot has changed since then. I mean, especially in the last 2 years, we've seen an increasing number of buy-side clients, larger hedge funds, more and more crypto funds. Banks have been a bit slow. I'm sure you probably agree, Seamus, especially over the last really only 6 to 12 months, we've seen demand from banks. You know, they're now launching seriously launching their digital asset banking solutions. And so this took longer than expected, but we're all glad it's actually happening now.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing the same thing. I think the banks are slow, but once they move, it's, you know, it's like the aircraft carrier. It moves steadily and forward. You know, you described an interesting sort of evolution of the market infrastructure. You know, as you said, the very unstable sort of, not necessarily that credible exchanges going down, et cetera. You know, what have been the biggest challenges for you in scaling your business in that environment?
Yeah, well, you know, that there are many challenges. I mean, first, you got to have a product. Developing a product that covers all these use cases, you know, that can serve larger institutions like banks, that's a challenge. But, you know, we've kind of accomplished that some time ago. Then building in a sales team, you know, a global one that covers the different regions, that's a challenge. I mean, you know, building a sales team here in Switzerland, that's easy. You know, people know each other. So selling to a Swiss client, that's easy. But, you know, selling to US clients, to Asian clients, build up a reputation in the various regions, that's hard, right? And that's still ongoing. Being able to adjust to the various jurisdictions, you know, client requests are different. The way you interact with prospects and clients are very much different, you know, especially if you compare here Central Europe to American clients. That's a totally different story, and you need to learn to adapt to that. And then I'd say, you know, we come from serving buy-side clients, you know, prop shops, hedge funds, lately a lot of crypto funds. Those are usually smaller shops, like they have 3, maybe 5 people in a team. You know, that can be done. But serving a global tier one bank, especially with a SaaS offering, that's hard. I mean, that's you know, you fall under regulation, outsourcing regulation. You're dealing with many different departments within those banks. You know, that's a completely different story.
Yeah, you've described our journey as well. I mean, regulation is everything. You're dealing with banks primarily, it's kind of the top of that food chain. It's they're driven really by their regulators. So it'd be interesting to say, you talked about your global expansion, and you know, how does that, based on your kind of global footprint now, where do you see where do you see demand coming from? And what type of institutions, what's the mix that's evolving in terms of demand from what type of institutions and from where?
You know, so obviously it's been a lot of crypto funds, crypto natives. I mean, crypto funds are popping up like out of the ground, like mushrooms. In the last 6 to 12 months, banks, especially here in Switzerland, in Germany, but also more and more from the US, Southeast Asia. I mean, since last week, mutual funds in Germany are allowed to hold cryptos up to 20%. US banks have now been allowed to provide custody since last summer. Kraken was the first one to get a banking license. I think there's probably two or three now. So that's that. We're happy to see that. We'd be expecting a little bit more from Asia. It's literally just Singapore and Hong Kong. It'll be interesting to see what's going to come in Asia.
And with that institutional sort of evolution and basically geographic distribution, where's the strongest demand in terms of instruments and assets that they're looking for? What are the patterns there?
Sure. The entry point is always spot market. So, obviously Bitcoin and Ether is first. That's how all the banks start. Then the top coins, derivatives have massively increased demand for derivatives, futures, options, and also perpetual swaps, which is, for banks and for financial institutions, that's a challenge. Perpetual swaps, they don't exist in the traditional space. So you gotta, first build an understanding, how do they actually work? They're extremely popular among retail traders, but haven't seen that much demand from financial institutions. Another challenge when trading derivatives, in traditional space, if you buy a future, that's not stock to the exchange. You can, through clearing networks, you can move that to another broker or another venue. In the crypto space, if you buy a derivative, that derivative is stock to the exchange and you're exposed to counterparty risk. ETFs, still no ETFs in the US. There have been many, many attempts. It's still not happening. The SEC is holding back. Here in Europe, we have a few. Leontech has launched. So luckily, we see some ETFs here. I think, eventually, obviously, everybody wants to get to security tokens or tokenized securities. That's if you talk to a bank about the long-term vision, that's the big goal. That's where they want to get to. But let's be honest, until today, there's still no secondary marketplaces. Since Monday, they're actually allowed here in Switzerland with the new DLT law, but that's going to take a little while until we actually see the first security token exchange go live. I can say banks have realized now that even though security tokens aren't alive yet, at least not on secondary markets, starting with crypto assets is a very good exercise. It's the same technology. It's blockchain technology. And your CEO, Adrian, I remember him saying that, dealing with public blockchains, that's actually the hard part. Dealing with closed systems, which is probably what we're going to see for security tokens, that's then going to be easier. So it's a very good exercise, actually, for a bank to get started with this topic through crypto assets.
100% agree on that same technology. We often say that basically you build for crypto and you effectively get the whatever comes next in terms of secured token markets for free because it's the same with potentially lower requirements. So I'm very much on the same philosophical sort of strand there. Now, you mentioned some of the product problems the banks face. What are other difficulties do financial institutions, let's say particularly banks, face when they're trading digital assets today?
Generally, what we're helping the bank with is trying to achieve best execution, get the best price for the lowest cost and risk. And so obviously this whole best execution topic ties in very closely with risk management. In an ideal world, a digital asset banking system has several characteristics that it needs to fulfill to ensure best execution. So to give you a few examples, so obviously market-wide connectivity, you need to be able to connect to multiple exchanges, brokers, OTC desks, available on the market, so that whatever happens, you always have available venues at any time. You know, this sort of diversification allows you just to get the best price, you know, wherever it is available. Now, the difficult thing with that is that, you know, these exchange APIs, they're not standardized. Every venue has a different API. You know, they're becoming more and more stable. Not all of them. We still see issues even today. So, you know, what doesn't work is to pick just a single venue, a single broker. You know, you cannot provide best execution with just a single broker. Then there is operational risk. You know, the entire pre-trade, trade, post-trade process needs to be automated. And this poses, you know, potential reputational damage and financial loss, mainly from human failure. You know, I'm talking about fat finger trades or wrongfully entered deposit addresses, right? If you do that, your assets are gone. You know, you cannot recover those. Then there is execution risk. So the goal is to obviously execute an order as fast as possible. Any delay means market timing risk. So ideally, you know, you as a financial institution want to fund your exchange accounts just before a trade to minimize exposure to that exchange. So the goal is to get the best possible price in the market, source liquidity from multiple venues. And you basically need something like a smart order router, which is something that we integrate in Wireswarm. You know, large orders tend to move the market, and other market participants that are specialized in that will front run your trades. So when you're dealing large size, you need to split up a large order. And for that, you need things like execution algorithms, which is also something that we provide with AlgoTrader. Then there is the counterparty risk. You know, today we realize that most of the banks that have launched digital assets, they're trading with brokers. So why are they not trading with exchanges? You know, that would be cheaper. You know, fees are lower. The problem is the associated counterparty risk. If you trade an exchange, you have to trade, pre-fund the exchange account. And basically with that, you lose custody to those assets. So, you know, in an ideal world, you would hold, again, you know, custody over your funds until the order gets submitted. So the problem there is, again, market timing risk and also network fees. You know, especially in times of high volatility, network blockchain fees have spiked. So moving assets to and from a venue can become very, very expensive. Then there is the liquidity cost itself. You know, if you trade, let's say, 10 pairs on 10 exchanges, that means that you gotta have assets, you know, 10 times 10, the amount you wanna have on each venue. So that can end up in a huge amount of assets you need to pre-fund. And that increases, you know, basically just the cost of liquidity. And then last but not least, there is the execution privacy. You know, as we all know, blockchain transactions are public. So, you know, if you're a large institution and you move a large transfer to an exchange, that's easy, you know, for market participants to figure out that that's you, you know, that they will figure out, you know, this blockchain address belongs to bank such and such. And it's very easy to front run these trades. I mean, you know, Ethereum transactions take at least 10 seconds. That's more than enough to place an order on that venue and front run your trades. That's something many institutions are not yet familiar with. So you have these, you know, 4, 5, 6 challenges that you need to deal with.
I mean, that's a good explanation for the challenges and potential technical solutions. Now, I'd be curious to know, how difficult is it to integrate these systems? For example, how would a client integrate AlgoTrader?
Well, so on the AlgoTrader side, actually, let's take the Wires Swarm side, which is the sell side product. That's actually pretty easy. We provide banks with a standardized FIX interface. FIX is a protocol that banks are familiar with. On our side, to the exchanges, as I mentioned, typically these APIs, they're not standardized. It might be FIX. Very often it's something else, it's REST, WebSocket. So we do all that harmonization, normalization for the bank, so they don't have to worry about that. So the trading side connecting to the bank, that's not too challenging. I think the bigger challenge is that with digital assets, the blockchain is now becoming the data master. And previously, for banks with their core banking systems, the core banking system was always the data master and a holder of the truth. And now with digital assets, that's not the case anymore. The data master is the blockchain. So that's kind of a paradigm shift for a core banking system. A core banking system has to rely on an outside system and synchronize. And last but not least, also the life cycle of digital assets is very different. Pre-trade funding, post-trade settlement. So that requires a lot of flexibility from vendors like us and you guys at Metaco to make it as easy as possible for a bank to get started with digital assets. Seamus, you're on mute.
Thank you. Do you want to talk a bit more about the critical functional and technical capabilities that the solution delivers?
Yeah, sure. Definitely. Yeah. Critical functions and capabilities. So, we believe that an integrated system will need to consolidate order execution, custody, settlement, core banking integration, all into a fully integrated life cycle. So there are many components that this will require. Obviously, things like best execution with smart order routing and execution algos. You will need, as a bank, you want to see a global view of your assets. So you want to see, your assets in custody, in your vault, but you also want to see, what are my balances on all the venues with all the brokers to be able to manage liquidity, right? This often involves today, at least, quite a lot of manual work. There's going to be a treasurer that manages your balances and moves assets around. And, we're working on automating this, making it as easy as possible for a bank. Automated, that then eventually, leads to an automated liquidity management where deposits and withdrawals are done automatically based on a predefined set of rules. The reconciliation with core banking system, this integration that I just talked about, this paradigm shift. Then obviously, the KYC AML, that there are solutions out there today, but what we see is that many banks actually use multiple providers, and have sort of an automated flagging with manual veto rights. Sometimes you have suspicious transactions that you cannot trust these systems. Somebody will actually have to sit down, where is this transfer coming from? Can we really trust it? And then last but not least, reporting, especially tax reporting. When I talk to, people in Germany, that's becoming a huge topic. How do you report your crypto holdings?
Absolutely, we're seeing the same thing, both from a individual capital gains perspective and overall tax. Interesting that you mentioned the paradigm shift. I mean, we have many discussions about reconciliation, and we're always like, reconcile against what? You have the source of truth. But as you say, the way banks think about source of truth is not the blockchain yet. It's starting to happen, but that's the way it's definitely going to go. You know, I think given what you described in terms of the needs, you know, what's your market outlook for how this is going to evolve going forward?
Well, you know, now I think over the next few months and years, we're going to see more and more banks around the globe offering digital assets. You know, today, there is no one single way to handle digital assets. You know, there are many different options for a bank to start offering digital assets. Many questions they have to answer that will have an influence on their setup and process. Just to give you a few examples, you know, there is agency or principal trading. What do you want to offer? Is it agency? Is it principal? How do you deal with fiat? That's still a big question. You know, for US dollar, you have Silvergate and Signature Bank that offer these instant transfers. Here in Europe, we have SEPA for euro payments. You know, up to I think 15,000 euro, you can do an instant euro transfer, or you use stable coins. There is the question. I mean, this is more of a topic on your side, Seamus. You know, do you want to offer omnibus wallets or segregated wallets? That has a huge impact on your backend process. Then obviously for us, you know, the big question is, is the bank comfortable trading exchanges, or will they rely on brokers and OTC desks? How do you do the settlement process? You know, how often do you settle your trades? Do you settle a trade, you know, after each individual order, which is possible, but, you know, given the blockchain fees, that might be very expensive. Or do you settle once a day, you know, and just take the, you know, potential counterparty risk with your venues? Do you use, you know, try to provide best execution or, you know, OTC through RFQ processes? How do you want to deploy your system? Do you want to deploy it on-premise? Do you want to SaaS? Things like this. So there is many different variations. And there is every bank we talk to basically has a different setup. So I think we're going to see a lot more standardization. I think there will probably be eventually two or three potential ways to offer digital assets that will prevail in the market. There will need to be much more standardization. You know, we as the vendors, we need to work together much more. You know, key to successful digital asset banking is an integrated approach that unifies the entire trade life cycle. You know, order execution, custody settlement, all of this needs to be connected. You know, all of us, you know, we're all vendors, we're trying to sell our technology, but we need to work together. A bank, especially banks, they need not just one single solution. They often need two or three or four solutions combined together. And we need to do the homework. You know, we need to be able to provide them with an end-to-end system, an integrated system that includes all of these components.
Well said. We'd summarize it the same way. But there's one question received here. I think it's probably a logical question. I think I know your answer, but I'll ask anyway. So how do you manage, you know, how does the key management get done? Given we're talking about digital assets, it seems a logical question. But
okay. Well, that's actually more a question for you, because, you know, just to make that clear, we don't deal with keys. You know, we take care of the trading part. So we integrate with exchange APIs and brokers, but we are not a custody provider. We work together with custody providers like Metaco and rely on them, you know, to know how to do this in a safe and secure way.
I guess the default point here is basically trading is still largely centralized still, right? So you're going to centralized entities. So I have one last question to wrap up. And how do you see the, you know, we talked about it briefly, the intersection with the evolution from the centralized finance to the DeFi space from your perspective?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting topic. I mean, DeFi has taken off tremendously, and today, you know, it's actually very easy to trade through a decentralized exchange like Uniswap. I mean, you're just interacting with a smart contract. I think it'll take some time for this to become ready for financial institutions. I mean, I hear or talk to a lot of people at banks that are interested in the topic. I personally have not seen a single bank trading a decentralized exchange. I think regulation is going to be critical there. You know, how will that evolve? And we've seen lately some rumors that the FATF will apply the travel rule also on DeFi. And that's going to be really interesting. I mean, there is no entity, right? It's a decentralized system. How do you going to apply that? So, you know, that also poses a bit of a risk on DeFi. I don't know. I mean, it's a very fast journey, and eventually, I think we'll see a convergence. I could imagine also with, you know, newer blockchain technologies, Ethereum 2.0, which is much, much faster than Ethereum 1, that actually decentralized venues become fast enough to actually, you know, pose a legit alternative to centralized exchanges.
Very similar views, basically. So, Andy, we're going to wrap up there. It's been 30 minutes. It's been a pleasure to have you on here. Thanks for joining today.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to having you back again. So we'll wrap up there. We'll be back on August 20th with Sven Warner, who has designed new products leveraging different emerging technologies, including blockchain, digital assets, and tokens, to design industry-leading and service and operating models at the global custodian State Street. So we will see you then, and enjoy your summer break. Until then, thanks. Bye.
Thank you.